This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Columbia Gas says all Merrimack Valley residents displaced by the gas explosions in the region will be back in their homes by December 16th. Executives of the company made that commitment at a congressional hearing held today in Lawrence, called by Senator Ed Markey. Markey and others grilled the leadership of Columbia and its parent company, NiSource, calling on the company's CEO to resign.
I'm not sure that you should be allowed to continue to be the CEO of this company, given what happened. I think it is absolutely imperative that there be some price which is paid for what has happened.
In a few minutes, we'll speak with Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas, who was one of the lawmakers asking questions. But first, we speak with WBUR reporter Simone Rios, who has just returned from Lawrence. Simone, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much, Cal.
So Senator Markey called for this hearing, but there's already an ongoing federal investigation into what happened. So what was the focus of today's exercise? What were lawmakers hoping to find out from Columbia and the community?
So first of all, it really wasn't your typical congressional hearing. It was, you know, in a high school or middle school gymnasium. It was in the middle of the community that was impacted. That kind of thing doesn't happen every day. The committee includes Senators Ed Markey, Elizabeth Warren, Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire, as well as Representatives Seth Moulton and outgoing Representative Nikki Tsongas. Lori Trahan was also there, who's the incoming representative. They were trying to get more answers on what actually happened on September 13th, but also pinning accountability on the leadership of Columbia Gas and its parent company, NiSource. The beginning was sort of the, you know, the executives coming up and reading off of their prepared testimonies about how saddened they were with the loss of a life and for everything everybody's experiencing. Mm-hmm. Up in Lowell, Lawrence and Andover and North Andover. But the really compelling stuff came after that part. The two company leaders there had to respond to direct questioning from the Congress members. Here's Senator Ed Markey again addressing NiSource President and CEO Joe Hamrock.
Given what's happened, given this catastrophic event, do you think that you should be any longer allowed to run this company, given the catastrophe which has occurred?
Senator, the consequences alone of this tragedy motivate me to dedicate the remainder of my professional career to ensuring that nothing like this ever happens again.
So not resigning, Simone?
No, not resigning.
What else did members of Congress bring up today? I mean, they were calling for a shakeup at the top, but what other complaints did they raise?
There were a number of things. They were all critical of what they saw as a failure in communication leading to the gas disaster, and a refusal to take responsibility for it after the fact. Here's New Hampshire Senator Maggie Hassan.
There have been safety incident after safety incident after safety incident just here in Massachusetts, and it does not seem to have changed your culture. And that is of grave concern, because this can't happen again. It's 2018 in the United States of America, and nobody should be worried when they come home at night that their house is going to explode.
And that seemed to be a point that really resonated with people there, because that's what happened to them. You know, when they least expected it, these systems that are generally dependable all of a sudden were blowing up all over the region. And, you know, this, I think that, that point in particular really resonated with the people who are there today. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton criticized Columbia Gas President Steve Bryant for the long delay between the first explosions and the company coming out and saying anything about them.
On your website, you posted a notice at about 9 o'clock that evening, 5 hours, 5 hours after the two alarms were received by your facility, that there is a, quote, incident in the area, and that customers should make themselves safe. 5 hours. That does not strike me as a culture of safety among your employees or at your organization.
So it went on like this for a long time, really kind of a courtroom setting, the senators coming at these executives pretty hard. Senators and House members, you know, lobbying criticisms, and company officials kind of meekly apologizing.
So a lot of tough questions for Columbia today. What else did the company executives say? I mean, did they take more responsibility? Did they talk about concrete changes that they're making going forward?
They did. I would say under pressure, no pun intended. Hamrock and Bryant repeatedly said they take full responsibility for the recovery and even what led to these explosions. And they did say that in accordance with industry standards, they don't always have professional engineers working for them and making the decisions on the ground. But they say they are striving to abide by that guidance now.
And not just guidance, if the governor gets his way, right? Charlie Baker wants to make that a requirement going forward.
Exactly. Baker filed a bill in the wake of the disaster that would mandate that natural gas engineering plans bear a stamp of approval of a certified professional engineer. Seems to make sense, but that's not the case, and that's not the industry standard, as these executives pointed out today. Particularly when this work could pose a risk to public safety. As far as other changes in the company, officials said today they're going to improve communications and install automatic pressure control equipment. They also say they're going to put in remote monitoring devices that can shut down systems from control centers, like the one in Ohio, which got 2 overpressurization alerts the day of the disaster.
And Simone, I know that the compensation of these executives came up today too, right? For sort of obvious reasons. I mean, a disaster happens on their watch, and yet they're bringing home big salaries nevertheless.
Well, yeah, Elizabeth Warren was there, so you might expect she would bring up CEO pay. But in response to Senator Warren's questions, NiSource CEO Joe Hamrock said he'd asked for his bonus to be withheld. Columbia Gas President Steve Bryant said he would not accept a, quote, significant proportion of his pay incentive. Hamrock, by the way, makes $5 million a year, most of that in the form of incentives. Bryant said he makes just over $500,000.
I do want to get to one other, I thought, really powerful moment from the hearing. And this was when we heard from the sister of Leonel Rondon. She was talking about losing her brother. What was that like, Simone? And then we'll listen to a little bit of that testimony.
It was powerful. I mean, it really hits home when you're sitting in front of the person who lost a family member. Leonel sounded like a wonderful guy. And there were long periods of silence in between her words. Let's take a listen.
We will not have the joy of seeing the wonderful man we know he would have become. I stand in front of you in his honor. I will never have my brother back. But we hope there will be justice for him in the community.
So when you listen to that, Simone, I mean, the room must have just been silent. But what else could you read in the room? I mean, did you get a sense of confidence? I mean, the company has pledged December 16th time for everyone to get back in their homes. Did you sense skepticism, or were people feeling like, yeah, that's really going to come through this time?
It's tough to say, given the fact that they missed the previous deadline, which was November 19th. In the case of Ed Markey, he said that he absolutely did not feel like anything has changed. But he said this will be the first of multiple reckonings the company will face. For Senator Warren's part, she said after the hearing that Columbia is now on the line to get people's gas flowing by that December 16th date.
Everyone will be back in their homes by December 16th. We got it on video, and there were no ifs, ands, or buts. They committed. So we need to hold them to that.
All right. So there's very clearly going to be some strong oversight of that commitment going forward. That's WBUR reporter Simone Rios. Simone, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Callum.
All right. I want to turn now to Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas. She represents the 3rd District of Massachusetts. That includes the cities of Lawrence and Andover, which were both heavily impacted by those gas explosions in September. And of course, she was at the hearing today, and she joins us now from her office in Lowell. Congresswoman Tsongas, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
So, you know, I was in the Merrimack Valley just last week to see some preparations for the 23,000 Thanksgiving meals that Columbia Gas was supplying to customers. And Congresswoman, there were mixed feelings, to say the least. I mean, I think people appreciate the effort to make things right, but they're also frustrated by the pace of recovery. I mean, some of those families receiving the meals were initially told that they'd have gas in time to cook their own Thanksgiving dinners. So what's your level of satisfaction with Columbia's recovery work?
Oh, you know, one cannot ever be satisfied until every family is back in their home. And yes, the Thanksgiving meal was lovely, as I understand it. But we all know that holidays are best spent in our homes, and people had, you know, really hoped that that would be the case for Thanksgiving. And given today's testimony, and as you just heard from Senator Warren, they committed today that everybody would be back in their homes by December 16th. So our job is to make sure that the company does as it's pledged to do. But I do know there's an element of skepticism, rightfully so. People hoping for the best, but, you know, preparing for the worst. But I do hope that the company, given its statements today, honors its promise and does everything it has to do. Because in the end, it's about the company providing the resources to make sure that that date is met.
You know, we heard some from Senator Markey earlier talking to Joe Hamrock, the chief executive of NiSource, which owns Columbia Gas, openly questioning whether he's still fit to lead the company. Seth Moulton also questioned the company's leadership, in fact, calling directly for Hamrock's resignation. So, Congresswoman, do you also share those concerns about Hamrock's leadership in the future of NiSource?
Well, I share concerns about the nature of his leadership, and as others asked today, about the culture of a company that really did not put safety first. You know, I asked the question of Mr. Hamrock if they had a disaster response plan in place. And he said, yes, oh, we do. But when Mayor Rivera got up and talked through all that did not happen in the immediate aftermath of these events, it's very clear that whatever plan they had in place hadn't been looked at, if ever. And they really scrambled to find a way forward in reaction. And some of the reaction times that were talked about are indicative of that. Their failure to communicate is indicative of that. The fact that first responders had to play, in any event, would play a critical role. But in this event, had they not played the role they did so well, this could have been so much worse. So all these things are indicative of, you know, very, very poor leadership.
Yeah, I think that question about the disaster management or disaster plan stood out. But I also was struck by the exchange, Congresswoman, that you had with Joe Hamrock about whether he could guarantee that the costs would not be passed on to ratepayers going forward. And it didn't sound to me like he committed to that. What is your reaction?
I was frankly astonished, honestly, given that we'd had the conversation about executive pay and the wonderful salary that he makes, and then not to be able to pledge that people from very modest means who are struggling in the aftermath of this disaster with its impact on their homes, their livelihoods, their children's lives, that they could not make the simple pledge not to pass the cost of dealing with this disaster, which should never have happened in the first place. I also had asked if they accepted the findings of the National Transportation Safety Board, which in essence said this should never have happened in the first place. So, number one, it shouldn't have happened. It did happen because of failures within their company. And given that, that alone, I think, would warrant their not passing on the cost of dealing with this to the ratepayer. But that's compounded by the fact that, you know, their executives are really heartily rewarded.
Yeah, I think to put some detail on that, we've seen SEC filings that show Hamrock made more than $5 million in total compensation last year. He did say that he would give up his incentive pay for the coming year, but even his base salary was about $1 million last year, just to give you some perspective. Congresswoman, what about safety going forward? You know, we heard from Hamrock emphasizing that the top concern always has been and will in the future be safety. Do you take that as a sincere commitment from him?
Well, I think pledges are, you know, very pleasant to hear, but a pledge like that is easy to say. What the company does in the long run is really more important. So the oversight role of Congress will have to really play a major role in making sure that we hold their feet to the fire, number one. Number two, I think we have to look at the regulatory framework and see where there are lapses in that create too many loopholes for companies to go through and in the end compromise the safety of their customers. So it's a multifaceted effort, I think. Number one, just watching what a company does, number one, but number two, also being sure that the regulatory environment is up to the task and that the regulators, you know, are really playing their role and not too cozy with with those who are regulating.
Congresswoman, would you support then the governor's proposal that Simone and I were discussing a moment ago? That's Governor Charlie Baker has proposed a new rule that would require gas companies, when they're doing work that could pose a public safety risk, to have a professional engineer approve all of those work plans. That is not the case right now. Is that the kind of oversight you're talking about?
Yes, and that's something that a state can take at, and our state, our Commonwealth, is obviously doing that. But I think at the federal level, what we would have to look at is whether or not there should be such a uniform requirement, so that even though we might have that requirement here in Massachusetts, there may be other companies, that other states that don't have it or have even a lesser regulatory environment. We'll have to look at creating uniform standards so that people everywhere can be comfortable in the safety of their homes and know that the gas that's making its way into their home to heat their houses and warm their water is not going to do harm.
So just as a status update, as of this weekend, there were still more than 1,000 families living in temporary housing. Congresswoman, what do those people need most right now?
Well, what they need is a confidence that by December 16th, the company will do what it said it will do and make sure that everybody is back in their home. I happen to have a conversation today with a young woman. She and her son are living in a motel in Chelmsford, which is not a terrible distance from Lawrence, but still some inconvenience. And, you know, she was taking it with good humor, but as best she could. But nevertheless, you know, it's been a long time that people have had to live like this. And I think, as Mayor Rivera said so well, it's really a testament to the character of the city that people are trying to put as good a face on this as they can. But it's coming at great cost to them and to their families and to their livelihoods. And the company needs to understand that. And having said today that December 16th is a drop-dead date, we want to make sure that that's the case.
So, Congressman, I do want to ask you about another bit of news. From over the weekend, we saw quite a scene at the southern border where U.S. authorities closed off a port of entry temporarily at Tijuana. And in an especially rare move, they also fired tear gas at members of a migrant caravan from Central America, some of whom had begun to rush the fence along the border. And some of those migrants were reported to have thrown rocks and bottles at the border. But was this an appropriate response by Border Patrol, in your view?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's appropriate for migrants to storm our border, but it never should come to this either. And so what we need is an appropriate plan in place that works with the people who could help us resolve this issue. For example, our president, I think, has worked to antagonize virtually everyone that he should be working with so we can resolve the situation in a fair-minded way. But in any event, we also understand that this is a country that holds out great promise to so many who suffer greatly. But nevertheless, they have to make their way into this country through a process that's in place and has worked well for many years.
So what would be the right balance then? As you say, it's not a good situation to have people rushing the border. And on the other hand, I think most folks can also sympathize with the desperation that inspires folks to make that kind of move. So how do we implement an immigration policy, in your view, that sort of reconciles those competing interests?
Well, I don't think we grant legal authority to our military to act as an arm of law enforcement. I think that creates an unnecessarily dangerous step. It's an unnecessarily dangerous step that further threatens to sort of inflame the passions on all sides. So that is not an appropriate step forward. What we really need to do, again, is come up on a bipartisan basis with a comprehensive immigration reform that addresses all of these issues in a responsible way. And we've worked hard over the years to try to do that. When I was first elected to Congress, Senators McCain and Kennedy, now both sadly passed away, you know, had come close to doing that. And that agreement fell apart. And since then, you know, we've seen no real effort to deal with this in a thoughtful way. And it's clearly something we have to do so that we don't have the kinds of situations that are taking place at the border happening.
Do you foresee such an effort in the new term? I mean, we have a divided Congress now with Democrats taking over the House, but Republicans strengthening their majority in the Senate.
They do, but, you know, we always have to create, I think we do have an opportunity. We have to address the Dreamers whose status has not yet been resolved. That's certainly front and center the most important thing we have to do. But now that we are, and the Democrats are in charge in Washington in the House of Representatives, we can craft an approach to immigration reform that then can become the basis for negotiations. And, you know, we'll see what President Trump is willing to do and what our Senate is willing to do. But absent our support, our control of the Democratic House of Representatives, we wouldn't even have that opportunity. So it's an opportunity that we have to take advantage of, and we'll see where it takes us.
One other matter, Congresswoman, before you go. You know, you're wrapping up what will be your final term in Congress, but a lot of your colleagues are going to be gathering on Wednesday and Thursday this week to vote for the next Speaker of the House. Nancy Pelosi appears poised to become the next Speaker, but there has been a fight within the Democratic Party over whether she is the right person to lead the party. You support her, and why so?
Well, I had the good fortune to be sworn in by the first female Speaker of the House in our country's history. It was a moment I will never forget, and to serve with her as we were in the majority, and I saw her extraordinary abilities to legislate. And I think the passage of the Affordable Care Act, the passage of Dodd-Frank are just two simple examples, not so simple, actually, especially with the Affordable Care Act, and a monumental piece of legislation that is a testament to her ability to hold us as a party together, because we have many different points of view, and these legislative efforts are not simple, and get to a place where we could pass such significant legislation. So I've seen what she can do when we're in the majority. We were, of course, then in the majority with in the House, in the Senate, and had the presidency as well. As we made our way into the minority, I saw the other side of her ability to navigate and leverage what little power we did have, because in the minority, you really lose a lot. And because of her ability to hold everybody together, I think we were able to maximize that leverage to good effect, so that we were able to fund the many priorities that Democrats strongly believe in. So I've seen her at work in the majority. I've seen her at work in the minority. I don't see anybody out there who could come remotely close to that ability to legislate and to work with a very diverse caucus. And for that reason, I would heartily vote for her. Now, I do think we're getting to a point where we need to put in place a plan to transition to new leadership and create a mentoring program process, or begin to identify potential leaders of the future. But we're not there at this point, and we have someone who's demonstrated extraordinary capacity. And I wouldn't want to lose the opportunity we have coming out of the gate. It would be a waste of such of that opportunity to fight, have this family fight, and lose that precious time.
Well, could looking forward, though, perhaps mean new faces in the number two and three positions? You know, as you well know, not everyone in the Massachusetts delegation is so high on Pelosi as you. Most notably, Seth Moulton has been leading the charge of folks opposed to her speakership. But he signaled today that perhaps he'd be open to a compromise where maybe Steny Hoyer and James Clyburn step aside. They're 79 and 78, respectively, and most likely to be the new majority leader and majority whip. So would that perhaps be a compromise for Democrats, Congresswoman? You know, keep Pelosi, but move on to groom successors at number two and number three.
Well, that may well be a conversation in, you know, this in process. I've worked with all three and have great respect for Mr. Hoyer and Mr. Clyburn as well. But the reality is the world, the Congress needs to reflect the country. We're a very different country than we were so many years ago. It's one of the reasons I chose not to run again, having been a part of the political life of this country, either directly or indirectly, for many, many years. And I realized that, you know, we needed the voices of those who are the product of more recent times. So that's a conversation that's underway.
That is Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas joining us from Lowell. Thank you so much for your time again, Congresswoman.
Thank you. Take care.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers, and this is Radio Boston.